it's beautiful today. Yeah, it's beautiful today. It's about 68 degrees and sunny.
Perfect. Perfect. Sounds like the weather here in sunny Colorado today. So, works well for me. But, hey, Toby, as you know, I have until about 12:30, and I'll have to absent myself at least for a couple of minutes from there. So,
this is high.
Say it again.
Hi from Houston.
Hey, how are you doing? Hi. Hey, hi. Before you started, you asked me a couple questions by email that I didn't quite follow what the question was. Why don't you ask that question now?
Okay. Basically, we're gonna be in the middle of an expansion, so to get the the staff and everybody kind of related and accountable, we had each staff member take on accountability as far as what the expansion would look like, or our next the expansion of the facility. So we broke it down to five components: build out, pricing, schedule, retention, and attendance. All those are new systems put into place for the facility. So we were planning on implementing all five of those changes as we do the build out. And we wanted to kind of have like a idea, like a script for each of the staff members, or just so that when everybody's on the same page as far as when a student, new or old, ask, hey, why are we going through this? They have like kind of like a script they can work off of.
Sure. I think a better way to think about it is not so much a script, although scripting in certain places is useful, but just having everybody on the same page from a standpoint of what the outcome is from the student perspective, what the benefits and reasons are from a student perspective, if that makes sense. And the so to catch everybody up to speed, describe to them what your main school here that you're talking about, what the facility looks like now, and the breakdown of people and what it is you're expanding into.
So our facility is about 100. Actually, about 650 current students. The square footage is, for martial arts, is about, I would say, about 6,500.
Okay.
We are married to a gym, so that facility is another double that. So we're going to expand another 3,000 square feet.
Okay.
And so, so with that, we are most of our students, I would say about 85%, 90% are adults, men. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and majority of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and cardio kickboxing and mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And we have a pretty small kids program, so that's one we're trying to expand on.
Right, so the additional 3,000 square feet is essentially creating a new kids program in conjunction
Correct.
With the school, where the vast majority of your students right now are adult men, 28 and up, professional, college educated, doing more or less traditional Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Is that a fair summary?
Correct.
Okay, so in essence, what we're talking about, and Paul, it's really, in essence, the same thing that you're talking about with three of your facilities, is launching or relaunching a solid kids program. And Heidi, give you a contrast. We have a lot of other people on the call, but in Paul's case, they've got three locations that are predominantly transported after school care, now looking to dramatically expand or grow their kids' traditional martial arts program and family traditional martial arts program. So the principle is the same. Really, your highest priority here immediately is a big grand opening blitz to make sure that immediately the first month facilities open, you add 100 new students to the deal, and then be on the fast track to 200 as rapidly as possible. But hi, that number you were talking about, from a standpoint of active students, you said 90, I say 100, is that 100 should give you 20 to 25,000 gross. So it gets that facility off to immediately be a profit center. And if you're not careful, what happens is it grows slowly as an adjunct to your main school, and then will suck time and energy away from, what's highly profitable already rather than being an enhancement. So you've really got to make sure you have the staffing separate and that you pull the trigger A to Z on that grand opening blitz and fill it up right away, because if you don't fill it up, you end up with a syndrome of 40, 50 students, and it becomes the redheaded stepchild that's not being paid much attention to.
And then with the renewal blitz, you're looking at about 6 to 8 weeks out, or how far in advance are you looking as far as that goes, Mr. Oliver? Optimal.
Optimal 6 to 8 weeks is the time length. And I mean, you could do preparatory work ahead of time, but I mean, for everybody in the calls, this is an extremely relevant topic. What I would suggest is that you gear up all your staff so that the minute you come back from Keystone, you just pull the trigger, and it goes from that day through to the end of December. So, you want to have a big and important deadline on the deal. December this year, or Christmas this year, falls on the 25th, which is on Sunday. So your deadline can be the 17th of December. So that would give launch on the 7th, deadline be the 17th, and it gives you a week before Christmas to clean up anything that hasn't gotten done. And that's a timeline that we've done over and over and over again. So it's, depending upon how many people you have to do and high on your adult men's program, you have $500,000 sitting there that can be raked up just because of the structure that has been so far and the number of people you have in the field.
Okay.
Now you were looking at what, 147, 197, and then what was the higher level?
297.
297. And I would really suggest just use one that we start ramping up that 147 to a higher point. But I would go to 225, 227 or something like that as the next step, and then have a higher level of 297 or break into 300. What I intend to do. You got a weird echo there, Charlie.
Yeah, let me put it in Q&A. Yeah, and then hi, if you can just hit *6, then that way anybody else, if anybody has their speakerphone off, it's useful if you don't have a speakerphone on. But right now I'm muted, and hi, if you can hit *6, that should kill our background problems.
Okay.
Yeah, and of course for everybody, we welcome you to have partner staff, everybody you want on the call, but it's always better if they all call in on their own rather than speakerphone. But what I intend to move our franchises to in the new year is 247 a month on enrollment, leadership at 497 a month, and then have Master Club be more like 259 or something like that, 257. What we've been doing right now is 197, 359 for leadership, 259 for Master Club. But what we're finding is almost 90% of people who renew are renewing into the higher level. And the only reason we had the lower level was as a price fallback. And I initially set it up that way, expecting to be about 50-50, 50% the higher level, 50% the lower level. What our numbers tell me is that the higher level isn't high enough. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So you're at 197 right now?
Yeah, for a new enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't know if we have any. I don't know if Sean Harvey's on the call. I know Sean's new enrollment on the cardio kickboxing. Sean, if you are jump in, but it's $297 a month, going to $497 a month. Toby, do we have anybody that you know of at a higher price point on the new enrollment?
I don't think so. Not if you're comparing apples to apples. I mean, in some cases, there are a few guys who are doing, you know, kind of a different package of programs up front. You know, it's not really like, you know, kind of like Sean's model, like where it's a boot camp experience, you know, where it's like a four-week
right.
experience for $597
right.
or $497 or something like that. But
right.
as a regular ongoing tuition, I think we're pretty close. I think everybody's kind of, you know, still playing a little bit of catch-up.
Yeah. And, and of course, we're not talking about something more intense like after school, you know, training for care or daycare. I think that's trending towards $125 or $149 a week, generally. But, hey, since I'm on kind of a tight time schedule, let me hit a couple things real quick, and Toby jump in any time here. But we want to remind everybody about the Keystone event. And if you haven't booked already, it's important that you have your rooms and flights booked. To give you a sense, on the 4th, 5th, and 6th of November is when that ski area opens for the season. And the facility we're in is directly across from the biggest convention center in any of the ski areas. So they do tend to start booking those rooms. And so if you haven't booked yet, make sure you use our meeting code because they set aside a block of rooms for us. But we're going to start on the morning of the 3rd. We encourage everybody to fly in on Wednesday the 2nd. You do fly into Denver, take a rental car or a shuttle, whatever you want to do, but it's probably about an hour and 15 minutes from the airport to where the hotel is. And so if you fly in on Wednesday the 2nd, and it's tied into our Mile High Karate Black Belt Retreat and training sessions. And it goes Friday night, Saturday, and Sunday. And our intent is, especially Friday night and Saturday, is to do a lot of high-level instructor training that will include the Mile High Karate owner-operators, black belts, inner circle, peak performers, and staff. And it's probably the most important event for the year to bring as many of your, especially your teaching staff, as possible. And for everybody who is really going to launch a big renewal blitz, we're going to really cover that A to Z. So you'll really get a sense. So if you have anywhere from, you know, 100 to, like IU have 650, if you have a big group of people that need to be renewed, I mean, you know, I don't think there's anybody on the call that shouldn't be able to do at least 75 to 100,000 extra in 6 weeks as soon as you get back from the event. So you really need to make sure that you're good on the scheduling of that. Toby, anything to add that I didn't hit on that?
No, I think that's right. I think there are a good number of people who are kind of confused about exactly what's happening when, because there's so much happening. But I think what you said is exactly right. If you have any confusion about this, feel free to shoot me an email. But really what you said is exactly right. You want to fly in Wednesday night. Best case scenario, fly out Sunday night.
Yeah.
So that way you'll catch the Thursday, Friday are the mastermind meetings. Probably we'll go to dinner on Friday together. When we come back from dinner, we'll start the instructor, you know, class management boot camp, and that'll go through midday Saturday. So to catch it all, you're probably best to fly out Sunday sometime. And you know, if you were to ask anybody who's been out there before, that's probably the best case scenario anyway, because, you know, Saturday night is probably a good time to, you know, sit together and collaborate and, you know, kind of digest what you've accomplished over the last 4 days. You know, it's useful to have a little bit of downtime before you get, you know, back on the plane and back to the school, so you can kind of digest and synergize with everybody in the group. So,
we are going to do a lot of instructor training, you know, throughout Saturday night and into Sunday.
So, okay.
Ideally flying out Sunday night or Monday morning.
Yeah, in which case, Master Oliver, what we should make sure we do just for our edification is prioritize these guys at the beginning of the schedule rather than the end of the schedule. Since we know the franchise guys will be there forever anyway.
Well, everybody's going to be doing the training together. So from the standpoint of some of the other extra videotaping you do, absolutely.
Exactly.
So the next thing to hit real quick is we're aggressively working on having the 2012 schedule done as soon as possible from a standpoint of all the live meetings and so forth. And you know, I'd welcome feedback from everybody on what type of locations and what type of special things. I'm working on doing an event at West Point. There's a hotel that's right on the facility, and they have some leadership programs tied to that. So we're working on that. Also
thank you,
really sir. Trying to go ahead.
And Master Oliver there?
Yeah.
Hey, thank you. West Point would be fabulous. I'm getting tired of flying.
Yeah. Well, yeah, in your case, it's what, about 20 minutes from you?
Yeah, it's at the most.
Yeah, yeah. But that was Robert Bloom up in Fishkill, New York there, Robert. Hi, and Robert, while we've got you on the phone, give us some sense. Hi, what kind of intro traffic have you guys been getting the last 90 days? Hi.
Probably muted again.
Yeah. Robert, give us a sense for you. What kind of intro traffic last 90 days?
We're averaging about 30 to 35 intros a month. We're signing a good 80 to 90% of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't had a month other than July under 20 new enrollments since April.
Okay. Okay, good. And for everybody who doesn't know, that's in a, you know, you're in Rust Belt, Fishkill, New York, Hudson Valley, targeting kids and families predominantly, and high on the other end of the scale, of the scale, both from a population base as well as from a market. Were you there to answer that question? No, we lost high.
Mr. Oliver, what is it that they do to get that many intros?
Let's ask. Robert, give us the sense of what your intro traffic is coming from.
Everything. We do. We've got about 30 different marketing activities a month on average that we're running. There's no silver bullet right now. Every single one is pulling one or two each.
Well, let's go down the list from what's pulling best. Obviously, you're doing a lot of work online.
Yeah, we've got a tremendous online presence. So my website, and I would say ad cards are our two biggest pulls. After that, it would be like lead events, carnivals, fairs, being at the pumpkin and apple picking events up here, things like that.
Okay. So how many intros would you guess a month you're getting from online?
Probably about 4 or 5.
Yeah, so it's not a big number. But
no, it's probably getting 15 to 20 leads a month online, which translates into, you know, 5 to 7 intros.
Yeah. And hi, if we had him here, the last number I heard was they were generating about 150 leads a month online. And to some extent, it's the contrast between Houston and Fishkill, and to some extent, it's the contrast between the adult market and the kids market. Okay, so you've got lead events where you're out generating traffic. You've got the rack cards, in other words, the little, you know, it's the size of a trifold brochure, but it's typically a single card that you have. Probably how many of those holders out, Robert?
I'd say we're close to 300 holders out right now.
Okay, which is a very inexpensive thing to do.
You can't go anywhere in town without seeing our stuff, so.
Yeah. Very simple process, too, by the way. Very easy to get them out. You've got to put a route together where you make sure they stay supplied and don't disappear. So what else, Robert? What else is working?
Yeah, we've done some VIP work. We've got some joint ventures.
What do you mean by VIP work?
I send my program director out with a clipboard like Bill Clark and have her solicit people.
Okay.
We're doing, we've got some joint ventures with some of the birthday party places local. We actually have a six bounce house place right in our plaza that all the goodie bags have our ad cards in them. We do restaurant placemats where we provide the restaurant placemats for the kids to color on. We've got coloring sheets at all the local doctor's offices and dentist's offices. I could, you know, we could go on and on and on, but those are the bigger ones.
Keep going. Oh, okay, there you go. So, hi, what kind of intro traffic last 90 days have you, guys been generating?
I mean, we're still averaging about the same as the stats that you said, but it's been, it seems like it's more influx, like they all come at one time. So, we are, probably about 150 a month. And then what's been happening is, we've increased a little bit as far as like, warmer leads. So, we like, Robert are doing a lot of, in your face kind of stuff, more PR work. We just got on a local television talk show yesterday. Anti-bullying. So that went really well. And then, you know, we designed the gi to have Elite MMA all over the place. And then, Facebook. Like, I have, after Keystone, with the last time we met in Denver, we had I assigned my, sales manager as the Facebook person. So he posts about one or two posts a day on Facebook, and that's been tremendous because it just creates the momentum for everybody to see that it's an active community. And then
with Facebook, you're driving them from email over to Facebook or from the website over to Facebook, or are you on Facebook to get there, or it's a combination of those?
Yeah, so one aspect is probably the Google AdWords, sending them to the site, and then from the site, they can go anywhere they want, anywhere from Facebook to Twitter to whatever the case may be. We don't really do much Twitter right now, more Facebook, just because it's more visual. With that, and then with Facebook's great. You just have to make sure your budget is, you know, you make the demographics correct on Facebook, because you can lose quite some money if you don't, like, regulate who you're marketing to. So, So we narrowed it down to what our demographics were, 28-plus college-educated. That was a huge thing. Before, I was just letting the filter go off without the college education. Now I have a college-educated, and it's a smaller group, but they're a little bit warmer.
They're much more solid when you get them in too, which is an important consideration.
Exactly. And then I was just taking your advice. I think last year at Keystone, you guys talked about with your adult market, make sure you're doing some sort of events. So we started implementing UFC nights at the local, Buffalo Wild Wings. I don't know if you guys have those, but
I was wondering when somebody was going to do that. You know, because we talked about last year. We didn't specifically draw a circle around that, but we talked about going and finding the herd of your customers and where they hang out, right? And my example has always been in the family market is like the coffee shop crowd. You know what I mean? The moms, the upscale moms outside of the upscale suburban neighborhoods. The gated communities. Who go hang out at Starbucks for a couple of hours in the morning. That's always been my model. But I'm glad somebody picked up on the adult model. That's phenomenal, They all do that. All those sports bars do that. They buy the thing, they pay whatever they have to pay to have the UFC there, and they have, 100 people eating wings,
So we kind of bully everybody off the top. There's two stories that we're like, hey, we'll bring at least 80 people. So the BW3 manager is happy as a lark. So he's like, hey, I'll put your advertisement out and this and that. So this upcoming one on 29th will probably flag the cars with the little posters for cars.
Are you getting them to complete some kind of a registration form on the way in the door?
No.
Yeah, do the carnival model. See, what you want to do is you've got a natural bottleneck when everybody walks in. This is what I did with, I hate to dominate the conversation for 3 minutes here, but what I did with the local movie theaters when the first Kung Fu Panda came out. Yeah.
Let me suggest this. Let's go back to that as a conversation point when I have to upset myself here in a minute.
Sure.
I apologize for that. A couple of things we do want to start accomplishing here, guys, just so I give you a sense. One is, I would remind everybody that the event that we did in Golden, Colorado over the summer is that part of it was that sales boot camp. And it is all up on the Peak Performers Inner Circle site, and all of it is appropriate for putting your staff through. So, you know, for those of you who were there, it's a good refresher, and for those who were not there, it's a good opportunity to get up to speed. And the thing that you're hearing described here so far, I'll go back to Paul because you asked the question, is there oftentimes are one or two or three things that you can do that are big home runs. And you know, we've done big home runs with working with elementary schools and big home runs with running infomercials and everything in between. On the other hand, you know, the other thing that's on the site is the interview series with Jay Abraham, which is best I've ever heard Jay on focused implementation strategies, and luckily it was best I've ever heard him. The other best was Tony Robbins interviewing for one of their events, but he's very focused on direct implementation strategies, and in this case for martial arts schools. Maybe it was because I did some time prepping it, and maybe it was because Rob did a good job interviewing, I'm not sure. But the Abraham concept is the Parthenon. In other words, you know, you just heard Robert tell us that, like, his biggest hit is he gets four or five intros a month from one thing, but he's got 20 different things going, each of which generate four or five intros, and by the time it's done, he's got 20 or 30 enrollments. And Robert, tell us before I shift, what is the price point that you're enrolling these people at?
Basic program is $177, leadership $259.
And again, Robert, the conversation to High a minute ago was now you need to have the $397 program. And so you need to be on the option A, option B. And if you only get half of them on the option B, you've got half of them doing what you're doing now, but you've got the other half on something that's another $140.
Right.
So the thing about overlaying something above that is it doesn't hurt anything, because if you're wimpy about it, you still get the same number you would have at the lower price, and worst case, you're going to get a 25% or a third. Best case, you end up with where we're at, which is 90% of them, and you know, having to leverage it up again to have that imbalance. So, but the other thing before I go here real quick is you know, I've been spending and Toby has and to a lesser extent Jeff Smith and Bob Dunn, but we've really been focused on having an organized 3-year curriculum. Not that it wasn't fairly organized already, I mean, because we can see just the results that most of the former Peak Performers now Inner Circle have had. But really putting together the 3-year curriculum and the more advanced level black belt class. And, you know, my personal target is to take several of the members that we have in Inner Circle, and instead of next year having them focusing on grossing $500,000 or $1 million or $2 million, you know, trade what their gross is for the net, and to really get not only the gross up, but the operation systematized in such a way that we can have some more huge net operations here. And, you know, so many times, I mean, I've run $107 million, spent $2 million, and also, you know, run $750,000 and spend $300,000. I much prefer the second thing. You know, it's not a syndrome of bigger is better. You want to have a quality work life for yourself. You want to have a sustainable model for your staff, and you want to have a high net profit. And we're really focusing on that now that we've got a lot of people with some real good momentum. The other thing, though, is we're really working on having a combination of some interesting locations from an abundance perspective, and a combination of some programs like what we talked about with West Point, where we're really focused on either high level of leadership or high level of service, because it's that expansiveness of thinking that's going to get everybody to that next level. Obviously, I think all of our schools at the higher level have really mastered putting people in the front door, and anybody in peak performers or inner circles is fairly new between Keystone and what we'll be doing the next few months. You'll be in that same boat. It's not a difficult thing to do, but I would anchor in how important it is to have staff there with you at the upcoming resorts, and really focus on kicking off as soon as you come back and having a big number. In other words, Hi, if I were looking at your operation, here's what I would be saying. 650 people, worst case, 50% of them. Best case, 75% renewed, right? So worst case, 325 people, okay? And of those 325 people, 20% of them on some kind of paid in full. So now you've got 65 people at, let's say, $7,500, and you've got 80%, so whatever that number is real quick, 250, let's say, add $100 bump in payment. So the $100 bump in payment adds $25,000 to the gross on January 1st. And the 65 times 7,500, whatever that is, somebody can help me quickly, is a big number. So let me see. 65 times 7,500. That's 450,000. So you guys literally, if you geared up right, could do 450,000 cash and a $25,000 bump in the billing just from that 7-week period. And that was using the 50% ratio to renewal, not the 75% ratio. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So
go ahead.
So your price point, you're increasing the price point.
I'm not sorry. Say it again.
Oh, go ahead. So you would increase the, you know, increasing the price point to 190. Is that at 197?
Well, it would be more complicated. It would be more complicated than that, but it would be, you know, I would have an upgrade that we kick off that adds $100 a month to the payment.
Okay.
So if they've been at 147, I'd do it somewhere more like 247, and then have a prepay option for say 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we can walk through that specifically when we get on the phone or at the Keystone event. Okay, but hey. Toby, I have to run, but guys, there's always lots of questions, and so let me really suggest that this afternoon, after we get off the call, that we really actively are using the discussion board, or if it's a little bit more private, by email, but really, really be focused on making sure that you're feeding Toby and I your numbers every week and the operations results, so we can give you good feedback on that. And when we get off the call, let's really light up the discussion board and get that interactive. And Toby, I'll turn it over to you from there.
Sure. Well, I think it's worth just a couple of minutes to kind of expand on where we were at with High.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
High, one of the things, since you're doing that activity, and you're kind of a technical guy, you get all this email sequential autoresponder stuff anyway, right? I mean, that's kind of your you guys are good at that stuff. What I did was, I'm not sure if you were, I don't think you were in the group when we went through all this, but when the first Karate Kid, I can't remember, first Kung Fu Panda came through the movie theaters, I went to a bunch of the local mom-and-pop movie theaters who aren't, like, part of the big chains. Not that you can't get it done with them, but it just, you know, it's where I started. And one of them, the relationship I created was basically that. I had a meeting with the manager, and we sat in the lobby, and I sat there chatting with them, and you kind of know how I am, right? I mean, I'm looking for opportunity everywhere there was. And my mission was, you know, I was going to, you know, put my people inside the theater, hand out the ad cards, do a raffle basket, do all that stuff that we do at movie theaters, right? And what ended up happening was I was sitting in the lobby, and I saw, you know, it was midday on a Saturday, and just hundreds of people were coming by, you know? And it was a mom-and-pop theater, well, an independently owned and operated theater. They owned three theaters in Orlando. And nobody was collecting data. Nobody had a lead generation mechanism. They didn't have a VIP club. They didn't have anything, any way to communicate with these customers after they left the movie theater that day, right? And it was killing me. You know, they're a small business. They're a single owner operator small business trying to compete with like Carmike and AMC, right? Well, in my mind, the only way you can do that is to serve the customer better. You know, give them some differential experience, right? Why would they come to you rather than go to the AMC down the street? You know, so you have to offer them something kind of different, right? But so what I did was I just created a relationship with the owner where we gave them a little data slip. We basically built their VIP program for them, right? So, you know, they didn't have any kind of a customer rewards program at all. So we just trained all of their tellers, you know, the ticket people, how to hand them the little slip and say, you know, ask them, are you a member of the VIP club? And they say no. And then the teller just says, okay, fill this out really quick. You know, they didn't ask him if they wanted to be part of it. They just gave him the little slip and a pen and said, fill this out really quick, you know. And they filled out the thing. We collect hundreds of these in a day, right? And then I would scan them and fax them over to my guys over in India to do the data entry. And basically they were just putting them into my AWeber account, right? So I just built a separate web form and a separate funnel, right? And you guys are using, what are you guys using? You guys are using AWeber, right?
No, I'm using Constant Contact right now. I'm thinking about switching.
So same thing, Constant Contact, right? So I just built a separate lead funnel in Constant Contact. And what my deal with the theater was I'll do all the labor, right? All you guys have to do is hand the slips out, collect the slips, give them to me. I'll have my team do all the data entry, put them into my service, my sequential autoresponder service. You give me, you know, every couple of weeks we'll do one email to the entire list about what new movies are coming out, and then the opposite week I'll do an email about stuff I'm doing. You know what I mean? So, you know, now their emails are going to be more welcome guest stuff. Mine is going to be a little different, right? But either way, I have the data. You know what I mean? So like another implementation of that is we go all around the communities and do child ID kits, right? And so, you know, we'll go to an elementary school or we'll go to a wherever, you know, some kind of a community event, and we'll have a little computer and a printer and a camera and stuff like that sitting right there. And really the reason I wanted to do it as a child ID kit was because I collect all the data, you know? Everybody fills out the form that has their name, address, and all that other stuff, and then I put it into my computer and print off their child ID kit. And then we, you know, usually give them to them back at the school. They have to come and pick it up or whatever. But, you know, either way, it's like a data collection mechanism, right? But in your case, you have a much more even qualified market, because I was just getting everybody who went into the movie theater, right? Don't know if they're a parent, don't know if they have an interest, don't know what's going on. It worked really, really well when the hot movie was Karate Kid or Kung Fu Panda, right? It's a little different when it's not that. But you have a captive market of people who came there because they wanted to watch UFC. You know what I mean? So you've got people at least that are interested. So what if you did a deal with a manager and said, hey, look, you know, have everybody fill this thing out, give them a buck off of their appetizer or whatever, you know, bribe them to fill the thing out. I'll do all the work, you know, we'll do all the data entry, we'll put them into a sequential, you know, autoresponder for you, and, you know, once every couple of weeks, let me know what your special is, and we'll blast everybody out with your special, increase the business for the restaurant, and plus you've got all the data, you can, you know, get them in too, you know what I mean? I mean, it's not easy to get the deal done, but there might be some value in it, you know what I'm saying?
And then the VIP, the slips you would have them fill out, the VIP slips, just basic their information, email, name.
In the spin wheel raffle carnival model, you know, we would do the complete contact information plus a few questions about what they're interested in, right? Because it's kind of transparent that they're interested in that we're martial arts people, right? So we would do, you know, would you like more information about free character development and leadership skills lesson at XYZ Karate? You know, would you like more information about, you know, self-esteem building and focus building programs at XYZ Karate? And then would you like more information about, you know, lessons at free lessons at XYZ Karate? Something like that. In this environment, you might want to err on the side of less questions, just get the data, because you've got to get all the staff and everybody to do it for you. You know what I mean? So you might err on the side of just getting full contact information, name, email, phone, address, and then, you know, they have to have some kind of a bribe to do it. But you know what I mean? Basically, you're just kind of, yeah, their staff is, you know, going to facilitate it, so, you know, they're not going to want to, you know. But the manager got to do it. So, I don't know, I maybe useful, may not be, but I know that the strategy worked very well at the movie theaters when it was Karate Kid and Kung Fu Panda and, what was the other one? There was another one that year, Forbidden Kingdom or whatever. And, you know, it didn't work so well otherwise, but worked really well during those times because people were coming out primed, and, you know, we just had a bottleneck on all the data. You know, we knew everybody who went in to see the thing. So, made it useful.
Awesome. No, that's great.
Yeah, so especially with as much stuff as you guys are doing online. You know, the guy goes to Buffalo Wild Wings, fills the thing out, gets home, gets a free video, you know, online that's, you know, hey, I know you like to watch the thing, but have you ever thought about actually doing it? Now, most people are afraid to do it because they don't want to get punched in the face. But we have a solution to that. Here it is. You know what I mean? I think you can build a pretty robust lead funnel on that. So I didn't want to interrupt, but I thought that might be useful for everybody. What else is on your current lead funnel? What's driving leads in the front end right now?
I would say, I mean, and then actually signage, not so much signage, but like I would say just like a lot. I mean, we're still on the focus on the web right now, and then but like the PR stuff that really working pretty well as far as getting in the community. Like what you know, the big influences from going to the Denver trips were you guys just. You kept grinding and grinding. You gotta be in the community. If you're not in the community, nobody's gonna know you're there. So that's been a key function, a focus, I guess you could say, since we've been going to the Inner Circle for the last year, is just trying to make sure that we're in the community and stuff. So that's a huge thing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, especially when most of the guys on the call probably aren't in this circumstance, but in a lot of cases when new folks come in into this group, they might not have a lot of liquidity to throw into media marketing, you know, to throw into direct mail or, you know, television or radio or whatever. So it almost relegates you to doing some high leverage community stuff, right? And I know we actually have today, I think we have like 11 or 12 new people on the line. And total, I think we have almost 40 new Geek Performer Inner Circle members, that the bulk of which will be with us out in Keystone. So that'll be pretty exciting. But the there are a couple of resources I might point you to that are on the members' website right now that I think everybody should make sure that they go through. Last week, on our Maximum Impact teleconference, we had Sasha Williams as a guest. And Sasha is one of our Maha Karate franchisees, but he's a particularly useful model to study when it comes to community involvement marketing because he's in Fresno, California. I'm sure many of you have heard it 100 times, but I know that there's about a third of everybody on the call who doesn't know who he is. He's in Fresno, California with a single owner-operator location in our franchise model, and he's in Fresno. Obviously, California is the hardest hit, you know, economy in the nation statistically. Fresno is the highest unemployment rate in the nation and the highest unemployment rate in California. So he has a really unique marketing challenge, right? He's got, you know, lots of people. Unemployment, I think, is 13 or 14% or something like that out there. So he's got a big pool of people who are really freaked out about how difficult it is right now, right? Not just the people who are out of a job, but the people who keep getting beat over the head by the media every day about how many people are out of a job, right? So right now he's been, for the last 6 months on average, he's been generating about 250 intros per month. Mostly from, and Paul, perhaps to answer part of your question, almost solely from community activities. So what I'd recommend, Paul, especially for where you guys are, you guys do have a marketing budget, but to start off without having to spend a bunch of money in marketing and media, go to the NAPMA member section, and under, it's actually a Maximum Impact teleconference, so under Maximum Impact resources, there's a thing there that says MI teleconferences. And it was last week's teleconference, or 2 weeks ago's teleconference. And we kind of go through all the A to Z of that. But really what it is finding the big group of families that are hanging around And he had a couple of pretty good ideas. If you guys hadn't been hear of it, he had a couple of pretty good strategies that aren't readily apparent, kind of like Hive's Buffalo Wild Wings deal, which is brilliant, by the way. I mean, that's really smart. One of the things that he's been getting a lot of leverage with is, like, home shows, like conventions at the convention center, the local convention center, right? Home shows and computer shows and stuff like that. And, you know, home shows, there's a lot of parents, you know, a lot of moms and dads that are looking for kitchen cabinets and, you know, countertops and stuff like that. So they've been doing booths at those types of events and using that, you know, spin wheel, lead generation, set appointment strategy, right? And all that's laid out really, really well in that teleconference. So, I don't want to burn up a bunch of time today on it. But if anybody missed that, if you're on the call now and you missed it, it'd be really useful for you to go download that one and take a look at it. But, you know, in macro, I think Mr. Arbus is exactly right, and what you're describing is exactly right. It's got to be a Parthenon. You have to have, you know, 10 or 20 or 30 things happening all at once that can generate one or two or three, you know, enrollments a month. In these big carnival and festival models, they're high labor, very low cost in most cases, and in most cases, no cost. On the other side of media, you've got low labor and higher cost, right? I mean, direct mail campaign doesn't take a lot of work to put it together, but, you know, postage is pretty expensive. So, you know, that's kind of like the matrix. So, good. Okay, so I've got one other item I wanted to go through before we transition, and it goes back to, I've had a bunch of questions over the last couple of weeks on this linear sales process, so I just wanted to take a minute to talk through that with everybody. But any other specific questions about this or Keystone or anything that we're talking about today, I really think it is very useful for, I hate to get in lecture mode on this stuff all the time, you know, but I feel like, I just want to make sure that we're addressing specifically where you're at and what your needs are too. So any specific questions right now on what we covered, what we need to cover, Keystone, anything like that? Any thoughts? Any other marketing? Yeah, go ahead.
Just a quick question on Keystone. I normally rent a car, but I think this year I'm going to take a shuttle. Do you have any shuttle companies that you guys have used before?
Yeah, there are a bunch of them. I'll do a little bit of research on that, Robert, but there's one called Super Shuttle.
This is Carol Middleton.
Hey, Carol.
Hey, guys. This is Carol Middleton, and I checked the shuttles versus the cars. You can get a car for a lot cheaper.
Oh, really?
Yeah, buy yourself, get a car, and maybe we should look into what we do at other conferences that I go to and say, we put up a travel board and people, you know, sign in and say, who's going to get in at 5 p.m. and, you know,
yeah,
can we share a car? So it may
be
half as expensive.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I mean, Robert, why don't you just create a thread on the forum and anybody who's getting in Wednesday, I'm sure everybody's getting Wednesday. In fact, I even get in Wednesday. I'll let you guys know when I get in. And vice versa, everybody let us know when they get in, and we'll just rent a couple of cars and head on out there. There are a couple of shuttles, I think Super Shuttle and some things like that, and Carol, again, if you did the research, I will too, but seems to me I remember that it was more of a hassle, not necessarily because of dollars and cents, but just because of the schedule they ran. That's interesting. But anyway, so Robert, I think that'd be the best way to do it. So, you know, everybody, I'll start a thread up there. If somebody gets to it before me, do that, and we'll try to collaborate over the next couple of days and make sure everybody has a solution. Yeah, because really, for anybody who doesn't know, once you do get out there, I mean, there's really not. It's kind of a self-contained little resort. There's a few little restaurants right down there on a little strip and stuff, and you know, you really don't have to go anywhere. There is a little town, Frisco, and Dillon that are maybe, you know, 20 or 30 miles away if you, like, absolutely have to go to a Walmart or a Target or something and, you know, go shopping or something like that. But mostly it's all right in one little area there. Good, good. Okay, good. Well, anyway, so if anybody has any questions about anything in general, give me about 10 minutes to cover this next topic, and then we'll switch to any kind of open Q&A that you guys might have. Over the last 3.5 weeks or so, I've talked to a bunch of new folks on the team, and there has been a few common threads. One common thread kind of goes back to what we covered at Keystone last year, when we went through that sales boot camp. And I just kind of wanted to reiterate for everybody, and most of you, this will be like a simple review, but for a lot of folks who are just kind of getting started with this process, what they find is that they have a hard time wrapping their mind around, how do I raise the price? How do I get people to, you know, agree to a 12-month agreement? This is kind of a level that some folks are at right now. And all of that stuff only takes, it all takes the same transition in thinking to solve all those problems. And it's basically just how you do your sales presentation, how you do the program presentation. So I just wanted to walk through the bullet points real quick with everybody so that we're all kind of starting off on a common framework, and then we can kind of build from there. So what a lot of folks who get started in this have a challenge wrapping their mind around is, you know, if I raise my price, if I double my price tomorrow, I'm going to have less than half as many students because, you know, they're all going to object to that, right? Or some percentage of them are going to object to that. And then if I then again go later on, if right now I'm doing month-to-month agreements or I'm doing three-month agreements, if I make them 12-month agreements, I'm going to have some number of those people who object to that as well, and now I'm less than 50% as many people, now I'm down to 30% as many people. And then if I ask them to, you see what I'm saying? So they kind of go through that math in their head, which really isn't accurate, it's erroneous, but they go through that mathematics in their head, those mathematics in their head, but they forget the fact that if you just change the presentation structure, you don't have that problem. So I describe it as a linear sales presentation, completely linear. It's one step at a time, and you never allow anybody to make a compound decision, right? And again, most of you guys have your arms wrapped around this already, but just a quick review and reiteration for anybody who may be confused or might need a refresher on it. You should never allow someone to make a decision about more than one variable at one time. So you would never want to present down payment and monthly payment together, right? Unless you've gotten a yes to the monthly payment already. You would never want to present term and price together. You would never want to present term and contract together. You'd never want to present contract and EFT together. You know, those types of things, right? So what I always hated, especially in the multi-school environment, was when the school manager or the instructor, whoever did the enrollment conference, would come to me and I would ask, okay, what happened? How did it go with Mrs. Jones? And they would say, well, they had to go home and think about it. And I would say, okay, what specifically did they need to think about? And the guy had no idea. You know, the program director had no clue what they needed to think about. They just at some point during the sales presentation clammed up and said, well, we just need to go home and think about it, right? And they couldn't figure out what it was. And the only way that will ever happen is if you do a nonlinear presentation, right? If you do some kind of a multiple decision point presentation. Now, some schools, in fact, some associations teach a multiple decision presentation, which is they have a price sheet that says, here is our program. If you enroll for 3 months, it's $149 a month with $300 down. If you enroll for 6 months, it's If you enroll for 6 months, it's $129 with $250 down. And if you enroll for 12 months, it's $119 with $100 down. And what they're trying to do is do a parallel presentation so that people choose the longer-term commitment because there's a discount associated, right? Now, you can still get the same net result, but what happens is by presenting all of those facts all at once, in many, many, many cases that you can avoid, people just get confused. They don't know what to do next, right? So they say, well, okay, great. We need to go home and think about this and talk about it and, you know, make a decision, right? So the linear sales presentation basically works like this. And I know for a fact that there are at least 11 people on the line right now who need to write this down. So if you think this isn't for you, you might be right, but you're probably not, right? If you're already doing it this way, you know, I got you. So the linear sales presentation basically is you never move to decision number two until you get a yes to decision number one, right? So the first decision is, do they have a desire? Do they want to do this thing, right? And that's the one that in many cases, people who are uncomfortable in the sales conference skip, right? Meaning what happens is they do their whole program presentation. They say, here are the benefits, and here's how the classes work, and here's how great it's going to be, and you know, here's what you get, here's how it's going to work, here are the outcomes. Now it's $299 down, $197 a month, how would you like to take care of that? See, they skip the part about asking them if they even want to do the thing, right? So I hate to draw a parallel to selling a car, but, you know, it doesn't matter what the price of the car is if the guy doesn't want it, right? If you took them on the test drive and they came back and, you know, it doesn't ride as quietly or as smoothly as he wanted it to, it doesn't matter if it's cheap or expensive, he doesn't want it, right? It doesn't fulfill his needs, right? So the first question is, do you want it, right? So, you know, common piece of scripting and phraseology would be, you know, okay, you've seen what the benefits are, you've seen how we accomplish these results with our students. You know, assuming that this all fits within your budget comfortably, is this something that you would want to do for Johnny? Something like that, right? So you get the yes to yes, I want to do it, right? Now, again, at any point through here, I'm just going to go yeses all the way through. At any point, if you get a no, you stop, right? If I get a no to price, or if I get a no to down payment, if I get a no to anything, I stop dead in my tracks, I don't go one step farther, and I fix the problem, or we create another solution, right? There's no way that more information makes the sale more solid, right, as far as more you know, logistical information. So anyway, so question number one is, do they want to do it? Assuming that, you know, all this fits comfortably in the budget. Now, I'm making one assumption here, too, by the way. I'm making an assumption that you've already pre-framed the other common objections, like, are they going to be living in the area for the next 6 to 12 months? You know, those types of things. So they can't later on say, well, you know, I can't agree to a 12-month enrollment because I'm moving in 3 months. I'm assuming you've gotten all that out of the way, right? And we can go through that at another date, but I just want to go through the presentation piece of it for right now, because that has been the common question, the common thread. Okay. So number one, do they want to do it? Number two, can they afford the monthly tuition? Right? So I know they can make class. I know all that stuff already. So assuming that this fits in the budget, is this something that you want to do for Johnny? Yes. Okay, great. Well, now here's how our program works. We have several different versions, and right now the monthly tuition for our regular programs ranges between $189 and $197 a month. Is that going to fit comfortably in the budget? And then you've got to get a yes, right? So they think about it, they squirm in their seat, they, you know, they do whatever they do, and they say, yeah, we can make that work. Okay, great. Okay, so now, in order to get started in the program, typically students make an initial installment of, you know, roughly equal to 2 months' payments, which is $400 to enroll, and then their monthly tuition is going to be, you know, $197 a month. Now, since you came from XYZ Elementary, you get a $200 discount off the initial investment, so you only pay $200 to enroll and $197 a month, leaving a total of $397 for today. How did you want to take care of that $397? And then here's kind of the critical part. You actually get the physical payment. Right, you get it in your hand. They give you the check, they write the check, they give you the credit card, you go run the credit card, right? You're making it a solid yes, right? You can't leave any room for equivocation on any of this stuff. If you get anything other than a solid yes, you've got to fix that area before you move on, right? So again, just a quick review. I've gotten a yes on they want to do it, a yes they can afford the tuition monthly. Now I get a yes on, here's the down payment. I physically possess the down payment now, right? They've taken the effort to write the check, sign the check, give it to me, hand me the credit card, whatever, sign the receipt, whatever we need to do. So in their mind, psychologically, they've enrolled, right? So then once you've got the down payment physically, then you present them with whatever piece of paperwork you're going to use, right? So you should have it all filled out already before you go in the room, right? And you just, you know, you kind of turn the thing around and hand them a pen or whatever and say, okay, well, Mr. Jones, here's our flexible membership agreement. Here are the terms, like we talked about. Here's the program. We talked about it being a four-year program to Black Belt. And today you're only enrolling for about 25% of the way. So that's what these dates are. And here's the monthly tuition that you're agreeing to. Sign right here, right? And they, you know, you walk them through whatever components you have to walk them through state by state, you know, whatever, right? And they then agree to that piece of it. Then, however they made the first payment, we just automatically set them up for their recurring payments and inform them after that step, right? So they've signed the agreement. We take the agreement back, give them their copy, whatever, stick everything in the folder, pack it all up, have Johnny with his uniform and everything already, right? All that's all done. You know, you kind of like, oh, by the way, right? So, you know, you stand up and you say, okay, well, you know, you is that checking account the same account that you want to make the regular monthly installment? Yes. Okay, fantastic. Well, we'll go ahead and set all that up for you. We do all of that automatically. If you ever want to change that payment method, just let us know and we'll change that for you. But we'll do all the work for you on that. And that's it. As long as you're done, right? Now, where people get in trouble, let me explain two reasons that this helps to diminish contract objection and EFT objection, right? It all but eliminates contract objections because psychologically, they're already in, right? See, it's much easier if you think about my example. The example I always use is, you know, Homer Simpson sitting on the couch, right? If Homer Simpson is sitting at home and he has a beer in one hand and a remote control in the other, and he, you know, drops the remote control, well, he has to think about it, and it has to be a pretty bad television show for him to muster up the intestinal fortitude to even reach down and pick up the remote control, right? Once you have inertia, it's hard to move inertia, right? Once you're sitting down, it's hard to move. But once you get him to take one step, it's much easier to get him to take the next step, and then the next, and then the next. Each step gets incrementally easier, not incrementally more complicated, right? So when you physically get them to write the check for the down payment, getting them to sign the contract, you know, psychologically is much easier, you know, because in their head, again, they've already enrolled, right? They're already in. They're already psychologically invested. They're already sort of financially invested, right? So by using this linear presentation model, statistically, outside the martial arts industry, okay, I don't have good stats inside the industry because it's a private industry, right? But outside the industry and publicly held companies who do a very similar model, right, who have similar business structures, doing the linear presentation basically reduces contract anxiety by somewhere between 75 and 80%, right? So 7 or 8 of the people who would have objected to being in some kind of a written agreement won't, because they've already kind of taken a step closer to you. Does that make sense? So it's kind of a win-win scenario, right? You'll have less of them. You'll have less of those objections. But even when you do finally have an objection over a written agreement, you know that that's the objection, and you can fix it, right? The one thing that I can never fix as a multi-school operator, the one thing I could never fix is if I didn't know what the problem was. Any problem I could fix, right? They couldn't afford the down payment? No problem. Well, let me ask you, Mr. Jones, what do you think you can make today? Oh, I can make the first 200, but I don't think I can do the 400. Okay, well, no problem. Go ahead and write the check out. Make the 200. You know, you get the check. Okay, great. Now, when do you think you might be able to make the next 197? Would next Friday help you out? How about the week after? Right? You know, anything else I can solve. But if I don't know what the problem is, I can't even try to solve it. Right? So I think my frustration as a operating multiple locations through staff helped the staff be able to be more effective at the linear presentation process, because they started to absorb my values, right? They started to absorb the value of, I can fix any problem, but I can't fix any problem if I don't know what the problem is. Does that make sense? So any questions about that? It's basically just, this whole process is designed to do two things. Number one, it's designed to make the decision easy for the customer to make, so they understand exactly what they're doing step by step, and they're not confused. They don't have too many variables to think about, and they don't clam up and you know freeze up on you. The second thing is it makes it much, much easier for the staff to get the deals done, to get students enrolled, because if and when there is an objection, and there will be, right? There will be. Some people, maybe they can't make the 197 fit in their budget, and then you have to go into, you know, diagnosis mode and figure that out. But at least you know what the problem was, right? And you can go into diagnosis mode and figure it out. So anyway, does that make sense to everybody? Any specific questions about that, or challenges, issues, concerns, thoughts? Again, you're probably muted, so you'll have to hit *6 on your phone to be unmuted if you wanna jump in on that. But I just want to make sure
when
we're
you
all...
Said,
please.
When you said you set up the recurring payments, now what we do, we set them up for 1 year and then the recurring payments are monthly. Is that what you mean, or do you mean you set them up for 1 year, 1 year, 1 year? So what do you mean by set them up for the recurring payments?
well, basically, in our case, what we're doing is we're enrolling them on a 12-month agreement, mm-hmm. but they're never thinking about that it's a 12-month agreement. They're basically thinking it's a 4-year program to black belt. This is an initial trial enrollment. We really never even say that we're 12 months until we actually show them the agreement and they're moving through the paperwork. But our model, Carol, is a little different. Well, what we really want to do is we don't want them to be thinking about us in a term basis. We want them to be thinking about us as a long-term outcome, as an objective. So technically, we enroll them for 12 months. Then somewhere between the second week and ideally the second month, but in reality, it's probably more like 3 or 4 months. We move them to a higher level program, which we call leadership, at $359 a month. That typically takes them out to first degree or second degree black belt, right? So really, what we're trying to accomplish is we enroll them for a trial enrollment, which is 12 months, and then somewhere in the first, let's say 6 months to be conservative, somewhere in the first part of their relationship, we're giving them the opportunity to move to a higher level program that has a higher price point, longer commitment, as well. Right. So the end-to-end 12-month thing, we're not really doing that. Our paradigm on that is when you get them to think about you in 12-month terms, you typically have some big attrition spikes at those 12-month terms. If you get them to think about you as a 4 or 5-year term, attrition does get depressed. You have better attrition numbers. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
So what we're doing is we want to divorce ourselves from ever being thought of as a commodity and ever being thought of in a term basis. We want them to be thinking just about what the objective is. Now, it's going to take somewhere between 3 and 4.5 years to get the black belt, but, you know, that's what you're really enrolling for. You know what I mean?
All right.
So that's kind of our process. And again, out in Keystone, we'll walk through all of those mechanisms and show you the whole model so you can see exactly how the thing works. But it is actually pretty simple. Any other questions or thoughts about this linear presentation process? I mean, this is pretty basic if you're operating at a pretty high level. But if you've never seen it before, if you've never kind of moved yourself through that process before, it can be pretty overwhelming to not know why people aren't enrolling, you know, and just not know what to go solve because, you know what I'm saying? You know what happens, by the way? When people do that, what happens is they start lowering their price, shrinking their commitment level, making it, you know, easier for what they perceive easier for students to enroll. But see, they're trying to solve a problem that they don't know what the problem is. All they know is they're not enrolling. They don't know why. So they really don't know what problem to solve, you know? So anyway, any other last questions, thoughts, comments on that specific item?
Mr. Milroy?
Please.
Shane Stoffel calling.
Hey, Shane, how are you?
Good. Say, watching the videos on the website, I've adapted that. It's worked really, really well. The process is real smooth. The question I have for you is where, and I don't know what your policies are on this, but where do test fees and your packages fall into that so it's not an afterthought or kind of you didn't tell me about that?
It's a good question, and it's actually a bigger question. And Stephen and I think Metro Auburn and I think the same way about it. However, I think that you can. Well, let me tell you the two stories. Here are the two stories. Number one is the way we structure our program. You know, in the Maha Karate model, I don't ever want to ding them again ever, right? You know, every time you ask somebody for more money or money in general, you make a withdrawal from the emotional bank account. Right.
Correct.
You ding the relationship a little bit. What we do is I would rather talk to them about money when they enroll, talk to them about money in 3 or 4 months, maybe 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 3, 4 months, and then never have to talk about it again. So we typically just bundle everything into the tuition. In fact, we even have a program called Building Successful Kids that we build in the activities pass, which we build into the tuition that covers all of their events too. So they get a little plastic card, and when they go to a tournament, they don't have to pay a tournament registration fee. They just swipe their card. And when they go to a testing, they just swipe their card, and, you know, stuff like that, right?
Okay.
Now that's the way we do it right now. I've seen lots and lots and lots of successful models that do charge some kind of an examination fee or a belt test fee or whatever, right? And the only thing I think I would say about that is if that's what you're going to do, then what I've seen as a trend is the schools who do have some kind of an exam fee or an association fee or you know, whatever it may be, every couple of months or every 3 months or so, what I've seen is I would rather have a relatively substantial fee and have it be a huge over-delivery of service, right? So I'd rather not ding them $25 for a belt. I'd rather charge 60, 75, 85, you know, some amount of money that is, you know, a decent amount of money for some big experience, right? So maybe we give them a bunch of stuff. You know, maybe they get the belt and the certificate and the DVD of the next curriculum and the pat, you know, whatever, right? Is a book okay. And the workbook and the, you know what I mean? So I think I'm more comfortable in that environment because, I want to be... Everything I do inside the business, I want them to perceive it like they would perceive it at Harvard. I don't want them to perceive it like they would perceive it at the community college, you know? So, you know what I mean? Does it mean you have to give them a bunch of stuff? No. Can you put on a big show or something like that? Sure. You know? Some type of an experience that they don't feel like, you know, the reason you're charging them, you know, $25 or $60 for a $7 belt is because you need to make the next, you know, Mercedes payment, right? You know, so they feel like there's an over exchange of value for service. You know what I mean?
So am I? Excuse me. To understand that with the initial a portion of initial installments is covering their year for that program.
Well, actually, no. In our initial enrollment, they don't need any gear. They don't have any equipment or external needs, except for a couple of books, The Psychology of Winning and What to Say When You Talk to Yourself. But we don't sell them that in the school. We just you know send them to Barnes and Noble or whatever. So they don't get the perception that you know like we're getting the money, right? Now when they go into leadership, when they go to the higher level program, that's when they will need eventually some equipment and things like that, and a big stack of books, but. In that environment, we just, you know, when they do the enrollment, we then give them, you know, the outline of the equipment that they're going to need, and they can, you know, just order it off the website, you know, or whatever, right? And then that sort of thing. Now, we offer those things as an incentive if they do a paid in full, right? Some kind of an accelerated payment or paid in full.
Sure.
You know, we'll throw in the whole gear package or, you know, just leverage to make it a more incentivized process. But yeah,
okay.
when you're talking about gear and like a tangible physical thing like that, it's usually very easy for them to see, you know, how that works. Something like a belt fee, a testing fee, is a little bit more difficult for them to perceive the exchange of value. You know what I mean?
Sure. So that belt fee is included for example in basics of the 197. Before it's done, there's no additional charge.
Yeah, we roll it all in there. And again, we're also doing. You know, we're also doing events once a month or so that they can participate in, and they just swipe their card, and they, you know, we don't charge them anything for it. You know, stuff like that. It gives us a little bit of leverage to turn those into, you know, referral generating events a little bit more efficiently too. But, you know, yeah, I mean, the basic paradigm is we charge them once. They're on a regular tuition. That's all they pay. When they move to the higher level, they pay the tuition. They buy their gear package, but they perceive that to kind of be separate, you know, from us, and that's really it. And then I think at Black Belt is the only time they're ever going to pay like an examination fee, and really what that is they it's like $200-$250 for first degree, and what that is a mountain retreat, right? So
mm-hmm.
It's pretty easy for them to see, you know, they're paying this, you know, this amount of money, and it's this whole big thing that they go to for, you know, 3.5 days or 2.5 days, you know.
Got it.
That's right. You know, so again, it is a fine line, and I've seen people walk on both sides of the line very successfully. Our preferred model for our own franchise locations is to walk on the side of the line that dings them the fewest amount of times, right? The other side of the line, I've seen many people operate very successfully at having an exam fee, you know, regularly, you know, quarterly or bimonthly or whatever. What I've seen of that group of people, the ones who are at the highest level are the ones who really deliver a lot of, you know, flash, you know, bells and whistles and experience when that fee comes up, right? So, you know, they do the big, you know, gathering and, you know, all that sort of stuff, right? So,
sure.
You get the idea.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Absolutely. Any other thoughts on that, by the way? I know, I think we've got people in the group who are on both sides of the fence. And I think I can exist on either side of the fence pretty comfortably. Any other thoughts on that? Any ideas about people who are currently charging an exam fee or a promotion fee? What type of, you know, additional value you sort of project to them on that?
This is Carol. In my karate school, I don't charge extra. They get a belt, they get a certificate, and we have, it's kind of an event, and everybody's there, but they don't pay any extra. In Krav Maga, we are prescribed to give a three-hour workshop before their first test, and then an hour exam. The next one is a four-hour workshop, and an hour exam like that. So we do charge for that, but they get a lot, and they get everything that they've learned at that level is going to be redoing from scratch. So if there's anything they miss, right before their exam. So that's the main thing they're getting is a big workshop.
Yeah. And again, in for anybody who doesn't know, Carol has a very big Krav Maga program. And, yeah, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, by the way, the workshop model, because what they get really isn't relevant. Like, what physically it is, it's what they perceive the exchange of value is, right? So I think a great example that you know, Matt Schaumer blew my mind away 10 years ago on this stuff when I started thinking about it. And, you know, I started sending my guys, my leadership adults, I sent them to a Zig Ziglar seminar that was coming through town, right? Well, I mean, you know, we were talking about leadership skills, and we were talking about, you know, public speaking and communication and leading other people and all that sort of stuff. And this thing came to town. It just happened to be here, you know, in Orlando. And I'm like, well, what a great fit that could be, you know? So, you know, things like that. Whatever they think is valuable is what you want to, is what you kind of want to be, I don't want to say layering on, but what you want to be delivering. And I think that's a big paradigm shift that a lot of folks in our industry still haven't had yet. And they think it's all about, you know, the style or the physical or all that stuff. And in some cases it is, but what it really is it's about what the customer thinks is valuable. And in large part, what you've persuaded them to think is valuable, right? Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I take this little school in Orlando and I just have some Filipino guy come in and teach us sticks, right? Well, they only think that that's a little bit valuable, right? But when it's Rafi Pambuan, right, who's like, you know, one of the leading experts in, you know, Filipino Arnis stick and knife fighting in the world, right? See, now they perceive that at a whole other level. You know what I mean? So that's, I think, exactly what you're describing, Carol. In that particular model, they perceive that seminar, that experience, to be of high value with some dollar sign associated to it, some amount of money. And this is then, you know, you delivering what they perceive to be a lot of value in addition. So I think that's exactly. Any other thoughts on that, guys? Any other value adds that you guys are doing specifically that might be useful for the group?
And Toby, just so you know, I've been back on the call for a few minutes here, so.
Okay. Yeah, we were just, I don't want to say debating, but sharing a lot of strategy on two sides of the fence. You know, one, an all-inclusive tuition that doesn't have, you know, a belt exam fee, et cetera, et cetera. And on the other side of the fence, some type of an exam fee or something like that, but tying that to some over-delivery of value, right? And some interesting ideas on that so far.
And, I'm sure you probably already hear what my view is on that, but, you know, I really don't think that in the first year you should be dinging them very often for, for paying additional amounts of money. I mean, I don't mind having special and unique and exciting things for black belts, but if I'm a white or a gold belt and, you know, my primary objective is a $15,000 or $20,000 renewal, I don't want to annoy them with anything between, you know, the point of enrollment and that renewal. And I think a lot of people get that wrong, you know. The old Jinri model is, you know, sell them bare hand pads and sell them mouthpiece and sell them bare foot pads and sell them something else. all of it added together was rounding errors compared to what we're really trying to do with the three new amendments to the main program.
So do you give it to them as part of their renewal, like the gear they need?
Well, not necessarily, but I guess the point I was making is you know, let's say that my experience in your school is I come in and you tell me however much it is down, however much it is a month, and then in a month suddenly I need to buy something else, and then in another 2 weeks I need to buy something else, and then it's time for my gold belt test, and I need to pay $35 that I wasn't expecting. Well, now I've got 3 points of irritation prior to what I hope is the primary sale. And, you know, then after that, I mean, in practical terms, if I renew you to leadership and then give you the catalog and say, here's the package you need, you can do one of two things. You can raise the down payment, $200 and include it, or you can, let them know at the conclusion of the process here's what they need and have them do it all in one fell swoop. But the other syndrome is the whole pro shop idea, right? You know, I'm going to have this big pro shop and I'm going to make a bunch of money on retail. Well, I've yet to see anybody where I thought those numbers worked. I've had a couple of friends who were doing $10,000 a month in pro shop retail. And by the time you got done with the whole thing, if they just did a quarter of a renewal extra a month or they did one more enrollment, they'd be making more money. I mean, that's a different topic, but, you know. But, but that's my view on that. What Bill Clark does with his schools, what Tiger Schulman does with his schools, they're all congruent. You know, Schulman has gone from having a pro shop and a juice bar and all that stuff to, you know, they give them a piece of paper with the list of stuff that they need and they fax it into, in their case, their corporate office and drop ship it. And Clark and I's case, we were instrumental in pushing Century to create Century Direct, so we didn't have to touch the stuff again.
Which, by the way, the hands-off deal is really a big deal. You know?
Yeah.
Not having to deal with any of that stuff is a pretty big deal.
Well, yeah, as a broader principle, what you want to do is focus on what's important, right? And what's important is to get your name out in the community, get people to raise their hands if they'd be interested, have a solid conversion rate of those who enroll, hold their hand tightly in the new early stages, get them committed to train to Black Belt and beyond, and provide, you know, extremely good service. And everything that you do that's not related directly to get an enrollment, get a renewal, keep a student longer, is wasted time and unproductive. So, one example is you've got 12 different patches that you stock and you have to go order 1,000 at a time or 300 at a time and you inventory them and you pay attention to them. You have 12 different or 22 different or 42 different inventory items that you have to reorder and keep in stock and tie up money in dealing with. And then you have slippage because, you know, all the staff thinks they're entitled to whatever. You know, I try to get rid of all of that stuff. And, you know, to the point of buy the big, and I don't joke when I say this, trust me, is, you know, go to the janitorial supply and buy the toilet paper holder with the two damn big, industrial sized rolls so you don't have to focus on that very often, and get the light sensor on the sign, because, you know, inevitably the part-timer turns off the breaker on the sign and you have to go reset the timer box all the time. So it's all of those little things that, if you're going to make $1 million a year, what's the number, Toby? You've got to have
$528 an hour.
There you go, $528 an hour. Well, if you're going to gross $1 million a year, every hour of your time has to be worth $528. And so, anytime you're doing anything that's worth less than $528 an hour, you're wasting time. And that doesn't mean that there's nothing in the school worth less than $528, but that should be done by a $10 an hour or a $20 an hour or a $50 an hour employee, not by you if that's your target.
you know, the other principle that's buried in that, Michelle, is that, you know, I know for a fact a couple of our guys are having trouble with this, dealing with their staff members. In some cases, for the first time, really sort of stepping into a leadership role for their staff members rather than just being a colleague, right?
Yeah.
And that principle is what Jack Welch would say is, you know, two things. Is number one, if we can't be the best at it, then we're not going to do it at all, right? And the second thing is, if you give your staff a reason or an excuse to focus on things other than what you just described, other than enrollments, renewals, retention, and quality, if you give them an excuse to focus on other stuff, they'll tend to focus on that stuff rather than the four things that make a difference, enrollments, renewals, retention, and quality, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, the more things that they have to touch or deal with that don't directly relate to those other items, you know, you've kind of created a bit of a beast for yourself.
Yeah, they'll focus on the things that are the least stressful or that they can have to be held the least accountable for in many cases.
Wait, we're
I'm happy for us to run over a little bit if need be, since I was abstaining for a few minutes there. But did that answer the question that I may have missed part of on the testing and so forth? I mean, we got off on kind of a little bit of a different tangent there, but.
Yeah, I think we were pretty close. I mean, I think we covered a lot of that ground.
Yeah. Well, see, maybe look at it from just a slightly different way, and I think it's probably what you've already said, Matt, but is ultimately retention is about relationships. And if I feel like every time I talk to you, you're asking me for more money, all that does is it tears down the relationship. So it's the argument for EFT, for tuition billing. It's the argument for a billing company so that somebody else can be the bad guy and you can be the good guy. And it's the argument for not having testings and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I mean, it's okay to periodically have a seminar with some industry leader or the founder of your style or whatever. And your senior belt members won't mind paying $50 or $100 or $200 or $300 to do something that's important to them. But on a regular basis, it's so important to create that relationship in the first year so that everybody is really anchored in and they're enrolled into your highest level program and they're committed. And it's really important to be, use Stephen Covey's language, be constantly making those positive deposits in emotional bank accounts and as rarely as possible making withdrawals. So the less they can anchor it in to they're bringing you a check, they're reaching in their pocket, they're buying stuff from you, the better off you are. And many of these other things, if you round up the entire net profit, track down to all of the different components, both the costs and the people involved and the opportunity cost of paying attention. By the time you track it all down, it's certainly not worth the even small fracturing of a relationship with even a small percentage of your students. But anyway, Toby, I know we're at kind of the time link, but did anybody else have any other questions for me or you that we can address before we go? Well, that's easy.
Absolutely. Okay, good. Well, again, so, you know, make sure we see everybody out in Keystone. We're going to create a thread. If Robert hasn't done it already, I'll create one later on this afternoon on anybody who's coming in who wants to connect together and drive out to the mountains together. And we'll see everybody in, I guess, 2 weeks. Oh, my gosh, that's so crazy.
Yeah, it's coming up really, really quick. And there are shuttles, although I would certainly recommend getting a car. There are shuttles directly to Keystone, but it is a beautiful area, and if at all possible, we'll plot some time to stay over a day or two and see the immediate facility. It's still a little off season from the standpoint of skiing, but the Keystone Resort specifically is opening that weekend.
Yeah, I was gonna say I think they open for skiing that weekend, so yeah.
Yeah, that's opening weekend for that particular resort. I don't know about the others. I think actually a couple of them opened already, and then some of the major ones like Vail, maybe probably a little bit later.
Excuse me, I have a quick question.
go ahead.
This is James O'Connor. Hey, I do testing fees, and I'm kind of convinced now that I really don't like dinging that relationship like you guys have described. What kind of strategy would I use to switch to no testing fees but working in my tuition so I would feel comfortably?
It's extremely easy in your case. We create the new upgrade system, and part of the reason for going into the new next level is that all of the testing fees are included in the thing.
And
the good thing about that is that the ones that already know about what they've been paying for the testing fee is it gives you a real big positive aspect. And I would never suggest anybody that, you know, let's take a scenario, if you've got 200 students paying $120 a month each now and paying $40 quarterly for their bill, I would never suggest anybody to just unilaterally eliminate the testing fees, because then what you're doing is you're eliminating a pretty big chunk of revenue from the school with no counterbalance. But what I would do for the existing students is it's the big upgrade, the $100 a month bump in the tuition, the prepay option, but that package includes all the testing fees. So in essence, in their mind, that wipes out a big chunk of the increase in tuition mentally for them. Go ahead.
I've already launched the upgrade my leadership team,
and I've got
a good chunk of them already in, but I didn't really factor like any type of testing fee in there, so I'm going to be losing a bunch if I just go ahead and grandfather them in on like some sort of free testing. You know what I mean?
No, everybody else you put into leadership, you know, raise the price again and include that.
Gotcha.
The ones you already put into leadership, you know, we've structured a few times. I'd have to look at your specific numbers. But we've structured a few times where, what would be an example, Toby? It's testing between now and black belt is going to be $500, and if you want to one-time pay $200, that covers your testing fees for life or something like that.
Okay.
And, you know, you can do something like that, too. Or, I mean, what I always like to do is just create the next new thing, you know. Create, for the leadership people, create the leadership VIP, and there's something else they get plus that includes that. And again, you know, I hate to say it this way, you know, the NAPA structure for members is Black Belt Club and then leadership or gold team. I think a gold team is kind of the high end of that on the real instructor level. But there's nothing special about the terminology. It's about creating the picture for them about what's special about the next higher thing. And it's the other thing we'll be talking a lot about is there's always going to be 20% of your students who will do the highest level thing that you have available for them if they can afford it. And so depending upon what it is, you may not have 20%, but you might have 10%. And, you know, we've seen schools launch the $997 or the $1,297 or the $1,597 program or, you know, $30,000, you know, 1 year private, semi-private lesson packages, and had, again, if you had 200 students, might have 40 that want to and 20 that can, but if it's 20 at $1,000 a month, that jumps your gross by $20,000 as long as you don't overlay an awful lot of work you have to do for it. That's well worthwhile.
Gotcha. Thank you.
And the additional leverage, by the way, when you launch the upgrade program, it's exactly what I did. I just bundled in the testing fee that they were, you know, some were already irritated about but wouldn't tell me anyway, right?
Yeah.
And then the new people who came in the door, they didn't know any different anyway, so I just had different sheets for them, you know?
Yeah.
And then anybody in the middle who didn't do the thing yet, they just continued on the way they were before, you know?
Yeah.
And eventually we got down through the list and got to all of them anyway. So it is a useful piece of leverage to get them moving together the thing, especially at the beginning.
And to go back to what you just said, Toby, you know, there's nothing that says you can't be differential. So all the new people in leadership have one package of things, and all the old people have what you promised. You've got to give them what you promised them when you signed them, but you don't have to give them all the stuff that everybody else is getting. And you'll occasionally have the mom who, you know, thumps everybody and asks what they're paying and what everything else is going, who says, comes up and says, well, why are they getting this and I'm only getting that? And of course, the answer is easy enough. Well, we changed the way we're doing it a year after you renewed, and frankly, we almost doubled the price a year after you renewed. So, if you'd like to pay the new price, you're welcome to the new package of stuff. I mean, that's an easy answer. And the ones that are pissy, it sets them up, and some of them, it encourages them to move into a new level.
Exactly right.
I agree.
Yeah, I had that. And we can talk through this, because I've been through it first person and third person a bunch of times now. And my deal was so, I don't want to say screwed up, but my implementation of this in my own schools was probably about as complicated of a matrix as you could have, because I didn't have room for classes. I had to move schedules around. I had to change class times. I had to revamp the entire thing, right? Including the price matrices and the membership terms. And the interesting thing about all that is when you move them upstream, it's very easy. You know, once you get all that kind of that foundation laid, it's not difficult. It doesn't upset anybody. You know, it's when you kind of go the other way, you know, that it becomes complicated. But there's nothing to it. I mean, it ends up being a win-win for everybody. I mean, that's like the bottom line. You know.
Yeah.
But anyway.
But I would say most of the people on the call have a huge opportunity to launch the next new thing as soon as you get back from Keystone. And to do just, everybody's number is different. But depending upon how many current active students you have, the ratio, 50% is a low number, 75% is a not the highest, but is a high number. We've got a couple of our schools now that are doing 87 to 90% of people enroll or renew, but going after longer-term students, getting them to change is a little bit more difficult. But I mean, you can do huge cash numbers November, December. And so if you have some cash needs, it's a good way to fulfill that. It's also a good way to just go into the holiday flush, which is always a good thing, and to have a big marketing budget for one of the more fruitful times of the year, which is January, February. But the other thing is it's a good opportunity to just go clean up the entire student base and get the vast majority onto the new thing. And frankly, it's much easier to do it in 6 weeks than it is to do it in 6 months. Because you just combine, making sure you talk to everybody with high-frequency direct mail and email and voicemail and talking to them all in class and just clean them all up at once.
I mean, and really, everybody who's been in the group for a while, what you should probably be thinking about is what is now the next new thing, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what is the, 597, 797, 997, Leadership Elite program going to look like in your school? Now's a great time to get the foundation for that. Because I truly believe that everybody in these groups should really be in the Tony Robbins business at some point. And be perceived that way by your customers, by your students, and that's a whole. I think that's a game changer for our industry. If we can have 250 schools.
Explain what you mean by that, Tony.
Yeah, the bottom 70% of the martial arts industry is in the business of selling physical activity that is basically akin to football, baseball, soccer, and chess. Right? I mean, whatever. Right? It's a commoditized trading dollars for sessions business.
They think they're in the fitness business,
right?
And
right.
Don't realize they're in the human potential development business, or they think they're in the hardcore self-defense business. And if you don't get that, it's about mental skills, focus, confidence, career enhancement, etc. And the example I used with somebody the other day is one of our new members that's got a Krav Maga school. Is the whole differentiator between the Navy SEALs and like the lesser guys is it's all mental skill set. It's not their physical proficiency, although they are in most cases more proficient at the actual things that they have to do. But it's about their mental tenacity, their ability to set goals, rise to the occasion, and so forth. And this is no different. So it doesn't matter whether it's a 35-year-old woman coming to you who's trying to lose the last 10 pounds of baby weight, or a 35-year-old adult male, or a 7-year-old and their parents. Everybody's looking for the same thing. The difference in the front end is only one of marketing. Is it's hard to get, or maybe I should say harder, it's harder to get a 35-year-old adult male to come in and tell you that he's really here for your confidence development. With them, you lure them with the workouts and the physical component, but you keep them through the mental and emotional component. The adult women, in many cases, you lure them through the weight loss and the fitness, but oftentimes you lure them through the confidence and self-defense element. And again, you keep them through the mental skills and the social skills and life skills component. And the differentiation of what you can charge is dramatic. Anyway, I interrupted you.
Well, no, I think that's exactly right. The Navy SEAL example is an interesting example, by the way. But that's exactly right. See, the people in the weight loss industry have this mastered, right? And in a lot of different healthcare niches have this mastered. But it's difficult to have that initial conversation with a customer before they know, like, and trust you. So if you take the example I've been using a lot with Chris Tomczyk's chiropractic clinics, well, the initial thing that they talk to them about is how to fix their back problem. But their real core problem is that they're overweight, right? But when they come in on the front end of the business, it's they don't trust you yet. They don't know, like, and trust you yet. So it's hard to have that sensitive conversation with them. But once they're a customer, once you've built that relationship with them, once they know, like, and trust you, and they understand your expertise in the area that you're an expert in, they're much more willing to have that discussion with you and be able to benefit from a higher level of what you offer. And in our particular business, in the skill sets that, and I'm not talking about going out and acquiring a bunch of new skills on your part. You already have the skills that you're already teaching your students right now are the exact same skills that if you went off to Jack Welch's Leadership Institute, or you went to West Point, or you went to, the ability to set a long-term goal, break that goal down into short, middle-term, intermediate, and short-term and daily goals, to be able to take daily action on those goals, to be able to be in an environment of, these are the same skills that people are paying tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and in fact millions of dollars for in the corporate world, in the corporate training world, in the, in all of these other, these pieces of the industry. And those are the pieces of the industry that I think the future of the martial arts industry should be filling.
Yeah. Well, like the Dale Carnegie course is teaching public speaking. I mean, but there is a caveat to that. I think it's not necessarily right that all schools are doing that now, because there are oftentimes a lot of gaps with staffing.
Sure.
If you have a bunch of part-timers who think that the primary role is to teach the fourth Kempo form or whatever it might be, and who are mostly concerned about the hand position, not the mental skills development and so forth. It's why high-quality full-timers are important. And frankly, it's hard for people to learn success skills from inarticulate, unsuccessful-looking and acting people. And so you've got to be hyper-aware of who the staff are, how they're trained, how they speak, how they look. And, a lot of times if you teach them some charisma and public speaking and you dress them up appropriately and so forth, you can be fine. But I think that is a missing gap in a lot of cases, is we're trying to teach, $400 a month lessons with a $10 an hour sloppy part-time employees, and that doesn't work. Anyway, well, we're way over time, unless there's something else that has specific questions or thoughts.
Okay. No? Well, again, we've got 4 days up in the mountains to accomplish all this stuff. So what I'd like everybody to do, just quickly, bring with you to Keystone your two favorite activities that you like to do with adults, two favorite things that you like to do with children that teach, you know, some kind of a lesson in the classroom, and your two favorite class management skills that you want you and your instructors to follow when managing classes. Things like, you know, how to use phrase correct phrase, different ways to, you know, manage the shape of the class, the pace and keep, those types of things. And be ready to share those things at this instructor boot camp, and it's going to be pretty productive. I have a pretty detailed outline for everybody by the end of the week, so I'm pretty excited about all that. So thanks, guys. Really appreciate your time. And Mr. Robert, thank you too, sir, and we'll speak in about 2 weeks.
Okay. Sounds good.